This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. I'm speaking to you live from our studio in Edmond, Oklahoma this morning. Later in the program today, we're going to hear a report from trumpet writer Brent Noctegal about the latest evidence of Iran taking over Iraq. If you've read the trumpet for any time, you know we've talked a lot about this prophetically important story for decades. Even before the U.S. removed Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein from power in 2003. The Trumpet's editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, has been saying, based on the Bible's prophecies, that this is exactly what would happen back into the 1990s. But Brent has some information showing this is now, practically speaking, a done deal. It's quite a remarkable story. Please do stick around for that later on in the program. Most of the program today, I'm going to focus on a subject I've been thinking about for a while. It's something our editor-in-chief has talked about a lot over the years that is becoming clearer and clearer in recent events. I'm talking about an assault on truth that is happening for a very specific reason. We are living in an age of rationality and science, supposedly. On the issue of climate change, for example, 97% of scientists agree climate change is real, man-made, and dangerous. That's what former U.S. President Barack Obama tweeted in 2013. You hear all the time about man-made climate change being settled science. The 97% consensus, that's practically unanimous among people who know this stuff. So if you dispute that, then you're against science. You are irrational. Senator Bernie Sanders, who's running for president again, he said just a couple of weeks ago, it's really a disgrace and an embarrassment that we have a president who rejects science, who does not even understand that climate change is real and caused by human activity, who does not understand what this planet will look like in years to come if we do not go forward boldly and transform our energy system away from fossil fuel. He said that on February 25th, just a couple weeks ago. This is essentially the argument that is driving the Green New Deal and a whole lot of thinking in the Democratic Party right now. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, people are going to die if we don't start addressing climate change ASAP. It's not enough to think it's important. We must make it urgent. There are just a lot of statements out in the public discourse today of how catastrophic it will be if we ignore science. So people are believing it. You'd have to be an ignoramus not to. There was a new poll by the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication that says that 74% of registered voters now think global warming is happening, and 67% say they are worried about it. And among conservative Republicans, that number is, it's only 42%, but it's been rising. It's risen by 5 percentage points just in the last couple of years since a poll in 2017. This point keeps getting hammered, and so those numbers are going to keep rising. More and more people are going to believe it. You hear enough times that all scientists agree and everybody knows, and if you disagree, you reject science, and you know eventually you're going to go along with that. So this is what more and more voters believe, so you're going to start seeing, and you're already starting to see more Republicans on board with this. There was an article in Bloomberg reporting on the conversion of Congressman John Shimkus. He's a Republican from Illinois. Bloomberg says, last month, in a turnabout, the Illinois Republican signed on to a letter with the top Republican of the House Energy and Commerce Committee that said prudent steps should be taken to address current and future climate risks. This article continues, Shimkus is among a number of Republicans who, after years of sowing doubt about climate change or ignoring it altogether, are scrambling to confront the science they once rejected. They're holding hearings on the issue, beginning with one Tuesday, and they have pledged to invest in technologies to mitigate its impact and are openly talking about the need for taking action. They're getting on board. Now, Representative Shimkus was asked why he changed his stance about climate change, and this is how he answered. He said, "It's just not worth the fight anymore. Let's just see what we can do to address it and not hurt the economy." So is this actually the case of a man who's come to see the light on this issue? No, he says it's just not worth the fight. The pressure on him has been strong. It's been prolonged. It hasn't changed his mind, but basically he can see that he's fighting a losing battle. It's just not worth the fight anymore. So he's going to work to pass legislation that will supposedly address this in a way that doesn't hurt the economy. Now, when he says address it, what I presume he means is he's trying to do things that will pacify the true believers on this issue. Now, what do you think the chances are that that will be successful? Maybe we'll talk about that question a little bit later in the program. But this is an example of our living in a supposed age of rationality and science. If Bernie Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez and all the others who say this is an existential threat to humanity that must be dealt with urgently, if they can just get the deniers out of the way, then we can move forward and science can save the world. Now, there are a few problems with this narrative, as we'll see, but in this supposed age of scientific rationality, you know, anyone who disbelieves that or anyone who is religious or believes in the Bible is pitied, or they're ridiculed in the public sphere. They're considered a simpleton or a barbarian or a Neanderthal. The world has moved past those kinds of superstitions and myths. We are rational. Now, if you accept the idea that science is right, that science is revealing this problem of man-made climate change, and the president and anyone who doesn't believe in it rejects science, and science will give us the answers that we need. If you're that enamored with science, then you have to be very concerned about another trend that is happening at the same time, which is absolutely antithetical to science. It completely undermines the idea that this is, in fact, an age of rationality, because it rejects science just as categorically as the idea that the Earth is flat, which incidentally is another idea that somehow is catching on in this modern rational world. Tennis star Martina Navratilova has been an icon of the LGBT community. She was one of the first high-profile athletes to announce that she's a lesbian. She's been a hero to progressives. But recently, this changed rather abruptly when she spoke out about something that's been happening with greater and greater frequency. Men are transitioning into women, and they are invading women's sports. Last month in Connecticut, two transgendered high school athletes finished first and second in the girls' 55-yard dash at the state championship meet. So the girl who would have won instead took third place after these two athletes who were boys. And these kinds of stories are cropping up more and more. Last October, a transgender named Rachel McKinnon won the women's 35-44-year-old sprint during the UCI Masters Track Cycling World Championships in Los Angeles. And there was definitely some bitterness on the part of the women that this individual beat for that prize. 2 years ago, a transgender athlete dominated female competitors in the Australian International Weightlifting event. The Washington Times reported athletes say Hubbard, previously known as the male weightlifter Gavin Hubbard, is at an unfair advantage, even if the International Olympic Committee says otherwise. So now science will tell you that men have certain biological advantages over women. The average woman is almost 5 inches shorter than the average man. She's over 30 pounds lighter. She has nearly 40 pounds less muscle and 6 pounds more fat. She has less than half of the man's upper body strength, 20% less aerobic capacity. She has lighter bones, brittler bones. She can't run or jump as far or last as long. She can't grip as well. She can't push, pull, lift, or carry as much. These are measurable things. This isn't just discrimination. This is facts. You know, this is why the record for 14-year-old boys' 800-meter run is faster than the woman's world record. The fastest 14-year-old boy can outrace the fastest woman. This is why in 2016, Australia's national women's soccer team, which was ranked fifth in the world at that time, didn't do so well when they scrimmaged an under-15 boys' soccer team. They lost 7-0. This is why men's and women's sports are segregated. Men compete with men, and women compete with women. And the truth is, those biological differences, those are realities that remain even if a man decides that in his mind he's actually a woman. It doesn't change the biology. Now, in today's world, if you draw attention to these facts, you are labeled a transphobe. This is what happened to Martina Navratilova. The LGBTQ organization Athlete Ally announced that it would sever ties with her. It was going to remove her as their ambassador, take her off their advisory board, because she protested the idea that men could somehow become women and compete against women in women's sports. She wrote this. This was after it all kind of unfolded, but this is the type of thinking that really got under their skin. She wrote, "It is obvious that men have certain inherent physiological advantages over women. These include height, weight, bone density, and muscularity. These advantages play a different role depending on the sport, with powerlifting being the biggest and most obvious advantage. Can we make sure those advantages are nullified so that women who have transitioned from men have the same level of physical capability they would have if they had been born female? Clearly we can't, because you cannot lose those extra inches of height, 5 inches on average, no matter what you do. Some advantages of weight and muscle built up over time are also likely to remain. So to what acceptable degree should they disappear?" Well, she was really excoriated for those kinds of comments. She said that she stumbled into a hornet's nest. "The support I normally get from my people, the LGBT community, was replaced by a barrage of quite nasty personal attacks, and I was dropped." Jettisoned is a better word, as an ambassador of that Athlete Ally organization. So in our world that is supposedly rational, that values science as it does, we have this stunningly radical social trend taking place that pushes science entirely aside. Science will tell you that people are biologically male or female. It will tell you how biology assigns sex. It will tell you the physiological and even the mental and emotional predispositions that biological sex gives to somebody. But you know what? Science can't tell you anything about people who have a feeling that they're actually the other sex. There's no scientific explanation for that. The transgender view is that gender is an artificial construct. It's just artificial. But then at the same time, they encourage people to express, you know, their authentic gender identity through stereotypical or even cartoonish behavior and activity. You know, boys should layer on the makeup and put on the costume jewelry and wear the big dresses. They say that somehow a person's real self is separate from their physical body. And then contrarily, they'll say at the same time that a person's body needs to be transformed to match whatever's going on in their head in order to make that person whole. So they advocate that even children receive puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones and surgery so that the body matches the idea in the mind. This is all fairy tale thinking. It has no basis, none, no basis in science whatsoever. Now, they use science, they use expensive drugs and medical procedures to force the physical to conform to the entirely unscientific view of someone somehow being physically misgendered. The best studies, the quality studies into this, the studies that are not politically motivated, show that between 80 and 95% of children who have some kind of dissonance between their physical sex and their mental sex identity outgrow that dissonance. They actually come to identify with their biological sex if they don't have people jumping in and actively encouraging that confusion. Now, you're not going to hear about that from the mainstream, but it's a remarkable example of how hostile the world has become to truth and to facts. If you just point out biological facts, you are branded a bigot. Facts are intolerant somehow. You can't state facts. That's discriminatory. And more, you face legal trouble for doing so. Now, it's one thing to lose a track meet or a wrestling match, but this type of unscientific thinking is starting to have far more serious consequences than that. There was a Daily Mail article from last month that said this: a mother was arrested in front of her children and locked up for 7 hours after referring to a transgender woman as a man online. Three officers detained Kate Scotto at her home before quizzing her at a police station about an argument with an activist on Twitter over so-called dead naming. The 38-year-old from Hitchin, Hertfordshire, had her photograph, DNA, and fingerprints taken and remains under investigation. Confirming the arrest, Hertfordshire police said, "We take all reports of malicious communication seriously." She wouldn't call this man who is acting like a woman, and he reported her to the police, and the police came and got her. This is what police are doing in Britain, as actual crime in Britain is rising. London passed New York City in homicides last year. The Daily Mail says that in England and Wales in 2017, police were only able to solve 4% of robberies and 3% of burglaries. So they're not doing so well at locking down the robbers and the burglars, but they're really coming after these dead namers. That's what's happening in Britain. In the United States, Illinois, there was a press report in December, Associated Press report. A transgender woman is serving a 10-year sentence in Illinois for burglary. She's been moved from a men's to a women's prison in what could be a first for the state. Well, this man who says he's a woman now is being transferred to a women's prison. These are the types of decisions that are being made by people in authority that have serious ramifications that are cropping up more and more and more. You see these kinds of headlines more and more that are changing society as we know it based on these feelings that a small minority of people are having. And these authorities feel like they know exactly the best way to deal with this, regardless of the implications that it has for society as a whole. Is this not extremely odd? You know, is it not odd that it's happening at the same time that we're supposed to believe that we need to restructure our political priorities and our national economies and even society itself in order to follow the impartial dictates of science regarding man-made global warming? Well, the fact is, even though these two issues may seem to be contradictory, because one is wrapping itself in the mantle of science and the other is totally unscientific in every way, these are actually two aspects of the same story. The fact is, this is not the age of rationality. In many ways, we are embracing an age of irrationality, stunning irrationality. We're seeing an assault on truth. That supposed 97% scientific consensus on global warming. It's nothing even close to that. Let me just read a paragraph from an article that Andrew Miller wrote in The Trumpet called Greenhouse Apocalypse. The 97% figure comes from a survey of almost 12,000 peer-reviewed science papers conducted by Australian scientist John Cook. The survey actually found a 97% consensus only among peer-reviewed papers taking a position on the cause of global warming. The catch is that only 34% of the papers took a position on the subject. Since 33% of the papers appeared to endorse the notion that humans cause climate change, Cook divided 33 by 34 to arrive at his 97% figure. It would be more honest to claim that 1% of scientists say humans are not causing climate change, 1/3 of scientists say they are, and 2/3 of scientists are not making such dogmatic proclamations. Okay, so that in and of itself, I mean, the idea that there is consensus is just a very, very great stretch based on where those figures came from. It's a very dishonest way of representing that data. Back in 2012, there was a survey in the peer-reviewed organization studies, and it took a survey of 1,077 professional engineers and geoscientists, or those known as earth scientists. 36% believed humans are creating a global warming crisis. So just over a third of them believed that. But the overwhelming majority of the people who responded fell into four other categories that are skeptical of this claim. They say that nature is the primary cause of climate change. This report says they believe that changes to the climate are natural, normal cycles of the Earth. Their focus is on the past. If you think about it, global warming is what brought us out of the Ice Age. So they believe that, or they believe that future global warming isn't going to be a very serious problem. So the vast majority, the overwhelming majority, we're talking about, over 60% of scientists believe either nature is the cause or it's not that big of a problem. But these types of truths are pushed aside. The dissenting scientific views are discarded. You know, the fact is that the Earth has warmed and cooled before. The fact is that it's not as warm today as it was centuries before people started driving cars and burning fossil fuels on a mass scale the way that we do today. And the kinds of predictions that people are making about what's going to happen because of these, carbon emissions and so on, those things did not happen. Those things did not happen when the Earth warmed up before. Now, that's not even mentioning the fact that there is no measurable link between carbon emissions and high temperatures or increasing atmospheric temperatures. It's not mentioning the fact that Antarctic ice is increasing, that the polar bear population is growing. It doesn't mention that computer models are spitting out these apocalyptic climatic scenarios can't possibly account for all the factors that affect something as complex as the Earth's climate. Yet somehow these scientists not only think they know exactly what is happening, they think they know exactly why it is happening, and they think they can fix it by limiting specific human behaviors and cow behaviors, as the case might be. That's amazing. Actually, it's not so much scientists who think they know these things. It's politicians. It's people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a 29-year-old who majored in international relations and economics at Boston University. She is the one who is so confident that she knows what to do to fix this problem. She's so confident that if her policies are not adopted immediately, people are going to die. Is this rational? I mean, do Republican lawmakers really think they're going to be able to address this issue in a way that will satisfy the people who are pushing and pushing to overhaul our whole economic system? Last year, February 2018, when the Paris Climate Change Accords were adopted. This is what UN climate official Cristiana Figueres said that they were trying to accomplish. She said, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution." That's what they're really after. It's not about science. It's about remaking society. It's about changing the economic development model. That's why it's socialists like Ocasio-Cortez who are pushing for this, because it undermines America's political economic model and it gives the government far, far more power. That's why it's a socialist, Bernie Sanders, who says we have to go forward boldly and transform our energy system, that it's a disgrace and it's an embarrassment to have a president who disagrees. He just rejects science. Anyone who disagrees just rejects science. There should be no debate about this. They have their cause, and if they push and push and push, and they push that 97% consensus or any other sound bites that do the trick, then eventually the people who oppose them will just say, you know what, it's just not worth the fight anymore. Both the way that man-made climate change is being handled and the way that society is being steamrolled by transgenderism, this is not rational. There's nothing rational about either of these things. There's no debate about these subjects. No dissent is tolerated. Anyone who disagrees is a moron, a denier. They reject science. They're bigots. And increasingly, they're being ostracized and they're being silenced. Now, we need to recognize what's really going on here, because it's easy to be distracted by the language of the left. They are masterful at using the terminology of justice and tolerance and rights and fairness and equality, terms that sound noble, but their methods for seeking these things are being exposed. There's nothing fair, there's nothing tolerant, nothing just about them. They use deceit and lies and injustice and intolerance and inequality. They use bullying and intimidation and coercion. These are prime examples of something that the Trumpet's editor-in-chief has called will worship. Worshipping the will. That term comes from Colossians 2. We'll look at that in a moment. But it's also evident in a quote that Mr. Fleury has often used from Adolf Hitler. It was quoted by Hermann Rauschning on August 31st, 1944. Hitler said, "What you tell people in the mass in a receptive state of fanatic devotion will remain. Words received under a hypnotic influence are radical and impervious to every reasonable explanation. A new age of magic interpretation of the world is coming, of interpretation in terms of the will and not of the intelligence. There is no such thing as truth, either in the moral or the scientific sense." This is what we're seeing. People holding on to radical ideas that are impervious to reason, unmoved by logic. We're in an age of magic interpretation in terms of the will, not of the intelligence. And Mr. Fleury referred to that Hitler quote in his cover story in our July 2017 Trumpet edition. His article was titled, "The Evidence Shows Family is Under Attack." And he wrote, "This is exactly what is happening to many people today. They push facts aside and they say that whatever you will to be, so it is, like magic." And notice this quote from Gerald Fleury. "It is by this illogic that the family is being attacked. In spite of all evidence to the contrary, people insist that sexual license has no consequences, that divorce is liberating, that children are better off without both their biological parents, that a child can be raised by a man and his homosexual lover just as well, that marriage isn't oppressive unless it's between two people of the same sex, that biological sex isn't reality, that gender is whatever a person thinks in his mind, and that anyone who won't play along is a hateful bigot, and many other bizarre fantasies. We are being told that we should enthusiastically dismantle the traditional family, the entire foundation of civilization, and that we will be stronger as a society for doing so. That is an abominable lie. It is deadly deceit. It is satanic propaganda that will destroy our nations and our civilization. Can you recognize, Mr. Fleury continues, how the radical left is leading the West into a world ruled by the will and not by intelligence? And many others follow along or do nothing to oppose this satanic, nation-destroying evil. A world ruled by the will and not by intelligence, not by reason and rationality, not by science. Certainly not by truth. No, it's just we say it, therefore everyone must believe it. Your logic, your reason won't stop us. That doesn't mean anything to us. This isn't about facts. You know, you can have a very reasonable explanation, but these views are impervious to that. Facts do not matter. Now, the only way they can actually enforce this is through all those tactics I mentioned, the deceit and the lies, the intolerance and bullying and coercion. They can't convince people through rational arguments, so they bully people through name-calling and intimidation. They focus on the media. They focus on the politicians. They focus on the courts. They use litigation. They get the legal language twisted to suit their ends. And soon, you have the tyranny of the minority. Now let's look at what the Apostle Paul said in Colossians 2, verses 18 and 23. He warned this, "Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of demons." That's not the way it reads in the King James, but that's what the words mean. "Intruding into those things which he has seen," that's the correct translation, "vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind, which things have indeed a show of wisdom in will worship." Will worship. Paul is warning about a grave danger, people worshiping their own will. Now, why is that so dangerous? Well, he writes this, "When a person," this is from Mr. Fleury, "when a person worships will instead of God, the devil can lead that person into anything." Now, this is really the point we need to understand. And Mr. Fleury brings out here, Paul was writing to people in the first century who were in God's church, and some of them were falling into this tendency. If they were susceptible, shouldn't we be on guard against it, Mr. Fleury wrote. Now, he talks about this in detail in his booklet, How to Be an Overcomer. There's a chapter called The War of the Wills. He says, people worship the will, but it isn't the will of God. It's actually the human will. Now, what happens if you worship the human will? What are you really worshiping? A will that is inspired by the devil. That wisdom in will worship is better translated forced worship of demons. Now, this is something that most people would have a very difficult time believing or even understanding, but it is really important. What is will worship really? When you worship human will, you're worshiping something that was implanted there and is being led by the devil. And look at the bizarre immorality and sins that people are getting into and pushing on society and celebrating today. It's all happening so fast, and it shows how powerful and deceptive Satan is. This assault on the truth, this rejection of reality, it's not coming from human beings. It's being inspired by an evil being who wants to destroy human beings. You get a lot of insight into the way he operates by seeing the liberal left. They're forcing people to go along with them. Mr. Fleury wrote, God never forces you into his way. He asks you to voluntarily get behind it, being led by the Holy Spirit and using that spirit. God is love. Satan is hate. He forces people to worship his way. because in a lot of cases they won't do it unless they're forced. That's what we see everywhere in society. If you don't go along with this thinking, they'll insult you, they'll shout at you, they'll chase you out of the restaurant, they'll bully you online, they'll threaten you, they'll condemn you, they'll make life so uncomfortable for you, you have to go along with them. You know, eventually it's like, well, you know, it's not really worth the fight anymore. Forced worship. You don't agree with homosexuality and transgenderism? Well, too bad for you. They're going to teach your children in primary school and they won't even tell you. I'm going to talk about this a bit more at the end of the program if we have time. But I'd like to encourage you to read this profound chapter from Gerald Fleury, The War of the Wills, chapter 5 of his booklet, How to Be an Overcomer. You can find it online at thetrumpet.com in our literature library. It's critical for us to understand this spiritual dimension to what's happening in society. You can see what happens in society if you lose the war of the wills. We don't want to be worshiping the human will. We want to be worshiping God and submitting our will to the will of God. And as I'll talk about later, God is a benevolent ruler. Satan is a tyrant. Worshiping a satanically inspired human, worshiping a human will, leads to tyranny and all sorts of problems like those that are proliferating in the world today. But worshiping the true God is the path to freedom and to peace.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
A recent visit by Iran's president to Iraq dramatically highlighted the fulfillment of an important biblical prophecy in the Middle East, as we will now hear in this report from Brent Noctegal.
Time may prove the last few days to be a critical inflection point in the history of the Middle East and the fulfillment of biblical prophecy in the region. On Monday, Iran's President Hassan Rouhani and a huge delegation from Iran began a three-day visit to Baghdad, the capital of Iraq. This was the first visit of Rouhani to Iraq since he was made president in 2013. It's been interpreted as a sign of Iran's victory over the United States for influence in post-Saddam Iraq, and rightly so. The visit comes at the precise time the United States is trying to put pressure on the Iranian regime with strict financial sanctions. It's hoped that by cutting off Iran's funds, the regime will be forced to change its warlike posture in the region. The United States was hoping that Iraq would join at least some of the United States sanctions. However, this visit makes it unlikely. Photos of Rouhani's trip showed a long table and meetings with Iraqi officials. At least 16 men were present on each side. Together, they are signing a variety of agreements that aim to cement the Iranian alliance with Iraq. Iran Foreign Minister Javad Zarif said on March 9, "We consider this trip a new start in our relations with Iraq." He discussed joint interests and regional cooperation. He also thanked Iraq for having, quote, "refused the unjust and illegal sanctions imposed on the Iranian regime." This visit also comes as the United States faces increasing pressure from Iraqi lawmakers to remove its remaining forces from the nation. Currently, the United States stations about 5,000 U.S. forces in the country at an airbase critical in the fight against the remnants of Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. Recently, however, Iraqi politicians are calling for the United States to vacate the base after President Trump said this to CBS Face the Nation in early February.
Well, we spent a fortune on building this incredible base. We might as well keep it. And one of the reasons I want to keep it is because I want to be looking a little bit at Iran, because Iran is a real problem.
The reaction from Iraq to this statement was not good. While everyone knew that the United States wanted to use this base to keep an eye on Iran, it wasn't stated. The Iraqi parliament had only agreed for U.S. troops to be in their nation for the fight against the Islamic State, and now it was seen, at least partly, an excuse for keeping an eye on Iran. Iraqi lawmakers were not happy, particularly those lawmakers that are in bed with the Iranian regime. And for the ones that aren't allied with Iran, they don't want their nation to be used as a battlefield between Iran and the United States. In fact, Iraq's Fatah Alliance, the second largest party in parliament, now wants to push for the United States troops to leave, and it's likely they'll be successful. For its part, Iran definitely thinks that the United States is on its way out, and that Iran will be the dominant player inside Iraq from now on. This was highlighted by another very important event that took place over the weekend. Just as Rouhani was preparing to leave for Baghdad, the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, was at another event. He was awarding the now famous Iranian general, Qasem Soleimani, with the Order of Zulfiqar, the highest military honor in the country. This makes him the first Iranian military official to receive the order following the establishment of the Islamic Republic in 1979, now over 40 years ago. But why give the award to Soleimani now? It has everything to do with Iraq. For without the work of Soleimani, there would be no meeting for Rouhani to attend in Baghdad. To understand Soleimani's critical role in the Iranian takeover of Iraq, we have to go back 40 years to the revolution itself, in 1979. Back then, Soleimani had just turned 22 and volunteered for the recently established Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. This military force was separate to Iran's official military, as that couldn't be trusted to ensure the continuation of the revolution. At the beginning, the IRGC, as it's known, was used to tamp down internal dissent, but shortly thereafter, the Iraq-Iran war began, and it was tapped to defend the nation from Saddam Hussein's invasion. For 8 years, the war raged on, which amounted to over 1 million deaths. All the while, Soleimani proved his worth on the battlefield, starting out as just bringing war to the fighters on the front and eventually becoming a regional military leader. Then in 1998, Soleimani became the leader of the IRGC Quds Force, a special expeditionary force that orchestrated Iranian actions in foreign domains. It oversaw the training and decision-making of proxies outside of Iran. It trained and directed Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, as well as conducted missions in Afghanistan and, of course, Iraq. Inside Iraq, Soleimani was able to win affection of several Shiite movements that were at odds with Saddam's Sunni governance. Then, when the United States decided to invade to remove Saddam Hussein, there was a temporary and informal alliance between Soleimani's assets and the United States Armed Forces. When the US deposed Saddam in 2003, this is what our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Flory, wrote. Quote, "Saddam Hussein was the only leader that Iran feared. Now the US has taken him out of the way. But does America have the will or strength to guard the spoils of war? Prophecy states that it does not. Have we now cleared the way for Shiite Iran to rule over Shiite Iraq? It may seem shocking given the US presence in the region now, but prophecy indicates that in pursuit of its goal, Iran will probably take over Iraq." That was in 2003. And that's exactly what happened. Soon after the US and coalition forces brought down Hussein's regime, Iran initiated a long-term proxy war against the United States in Iraq. That proxy war was led by none other than Qasem Soleimani. In 2004, the Quds Force began flooding Iraq with lethal roadside bombs that the Americans referred to as EFPs, for explosively formed projectiles. The EFPs, which fire a molten copper slug able to penetrate armor, began to wreak havoc on American troops, accounting for nearly 20% of combat deaths. EFPs could be made only with skilled technicians, and they were often triggered by sophisticated motion sensors. General Stanley McChrystal, who at the time was the head of the Joint Special Operations, told The New Yorker in 2013, quote, "There was zero question where they were coming from. We knew where all the factories were in Iran. The EFPs killed hundreds of Americans," end quote. In 2008, Soleimani actually sent a text message to General Petraeus saying, quote, "Dear General Petraeus, you should know that I, Qasem Soleimani, control the policy for Iran with respect to Iraq, Lebanon, Gaza, and Afghanistan. And indeed, the ambassador in Baghdad is a Quds Force member, and the individual that's going to replace him is a Quds Force member," end quote. Nevertheless, at the time, the United States was winning in Iraq. Eventually, though, with a new administration in the United States, President Obama decided it was time to draw down forces in the nation. And in the absence of the United States forces, the Sunni Islamic State rose to fight against everyone and everyone in the region, but but especially the Shiites of Iraq. Once again, the United States was called in to provide air cover. However, the main ground forces in Iraq were not the Iraqi army, but rather more of those same Shiite militias that were created by Soleimani years before. And again, they were answering to Soleimani. The United States actually found itself working with Iran to free Iraq from the brutal Islamic State. In January of last year, Trumpet editor Mr. Gerald Flurry wrote this: "When you see what Iran is doing, it's dumbfounding that the United States has followed an anti-terrorism strategy that involves fighting alongside Iran, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. For America to be fighting alongside Iran, something is terribly wrong. We have fallen into a deadly trap. America is not actually fighting alongside Iran. We are empowering it. Iran now looks like an effective and useful partner in the war against terrorism. America has helped to make Iran appear to be the savior in Iraq and Syria." End quote. And this is what has happened, culminating in the events of today. The president of Iran, Rouhani, is in Baghdad, proclaiming a new relationship with Iraq. And while it's not being stated, it's coming at the expense of a relationship with the United States. All the while, General Qasem Soleimani is in Tehran receiving the highest military award Iran has to offer, and the first one that's been given out in 40 years. The timing of the award is not lost on Iranians, or even the Iraqis. The award is an acknowledgement that for the past 40 years, Soleimani has fought for the revolution. That fight for the past 40 years has been largely to conquer Iraq. And Soleimani was there fighting Iraq in the 1980s against Saddam Hussein. Then, after the United States' overthrow of Saddam in 2003, he led the long war against the United States in Iraq. Now in 2019, with the Islamic State all but vanquished and the United States on the way out, he is being awarded as the conqueror of Iraq. Coincidentally, on Monday, Qasem Soleimani turned 62. This is a providential age for Persian conquerors of Iraq. Over 2,500 years ago, there was another 62-year-old that conquered the territory of ancient Iraq. His name was Cyrus the Great, founder of the great Persian Empire of old. Back then, it was Babylon that was falling. Today, it's Baghdad. Whether or not Qasem Soleimani recognizes that or not, he is part of a prophesied empire rising on the scene today, the biblically prophesied King of the South. And as in the case with the ancient empire of Cyrus, the Bible reveals that Iraq won't be the only nation to fall to this biblical king.
Thank you for that, Brent. You know, it's interesting, you were talking about the way that Rouhani was welcomed in Iraq, just contrasting that, as Stephen Flurry has been doing on his Trumpet Daily radio shows this week a little bit, with the way that the Iraqi government is treating the United States. Maybe you could just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, this is really interesting timing because their parliament is deciding upon whether they are going to have a vote to remove United States forces entirely from the nation. As I said, there's only 5,000 of them there. And the United States has said by the president that they're there to kind of watch Iran. And so you have so many pro-Iranian elements inside the Iraqi parliament that are ready to make this vote and say it's only a matter of time before they are forced out. The United States is forced out by Iraq, by the democratically elected Iraqi parliament. At the same time, as you have Iran, United States adversary, Iran, going over there, an official state visit, red carpet being rolled out, business deals being worked out so that there will be an unbreakable bond between those two states.
Well, you know, it is remarkable to watch this happening so closely, paralleling what Gerald Flurry said was going to happen, as you brought out in that report. Let's just talk about how this highlights the Bible's prophecies, because it was prophecy that informed Mr. Flurry's pronouncement or his forecast about what was going to happen here.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It was Bible prophecy and it was both history as well and understanding of the power base in the Middle East. Mr. Flurry wrote in his book, King of the South, this is a booklet that was one of the first that was produced by the PCG in the early 90s and was based on Trumpet articles that were written in some of the early years of those early 90s. And it talked about how the biblically prophesied King of the South, which is mentioned Daniel 11 and verse 40, is going to rise out of the Middle East. And it looked like that was going to be, it was going to be a radical Islamic power. Mr. Flory at the very beginning was saying, well, it could be led by Iraq or Iran. But by 93 comes around, he did firmly believe that it was going to be headed by Iran and that eventually Iraq would fall to Iran. He understood by looking at history that if this was going to be a Middle East power that was strong, it needed to control both Iraq and Iran. And given the Shiite powerhouse and the leadership of the Shiite religion comes out of Iran, it made sense that Iran was going to lead that. And then pending the fall of Saddam Hussein. Now, all of that has happened. Saddam Hussein has fallen. Mr. Flory wrote at the time when the U.S. was going in to depose Saddam Hussein that Iran was going to make the most of those gains. If you relieve if you get rid of the Sunni leader from that state, the Shiites are going to rise up and follow suit with Iran. And that has taken place beautifully. And this king of the south, though, it doesn't just talk about those prophecies in Daniel, it taking over this small territory of ancient Mesopotamia of Iraq and Iran. It also talks about it taking over other nations. It talks about it taking over Egypt. It talks about it taking over Libya. These regions of the southern Mediterranean, the Red Sea passageway, and so. Looking forward in Bible prophecies, that's what we can expect. But Iraq was always going to be the victory that was necessary before the Iranian regime could rise to have enough power to take over these other nations. They even wrote back in 1982, just when they established their Quds force, when they decided that Jerusalem, during the first Lebanon war, that Jerusalem was going to be one of the targets of the Iranian revolution. We need to take Jerusalem from the Jews. They said that happens after we take over Iraq. Iraq must come first.
Wow.
And so here you have the Quds force leader, the Jerusalem force leader, that has been busily engaged, especially in the past 20 years, at taking over Iraq so that eventually they can push forward towards Jerusalem. That is the end goal of this king of the south. And so now that Iraq seems to be in its back pocket, we can see Iran having the financial resources slowly but surely to try and enact the rest of its policy as this king of the south.
Well, that is quite extraordinary, and I guess a bit of a peek as to what may be coming in the near future. We've been talking with trumpet writer Brent Noctegal about the close alignment we're seeing between Iraq and Iran. He's working on an article about this. We're considering it for the next print edition of The Trumpet. That'll be headed to the printer next week, so you can watch for that online at thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much, Brent.
Thank you.
It's time for today's last word.
There is a profound exchange recorded in the Gospel of John between Jesus Christ and some of the religious leaders of his day. John 8 talks about a sermon that Jesus gave, and it says in verse 30, as he spoke these words, many believed on him. Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The truth makes you free. The truth of God smashes deceit. It protects you from deception. Now, if you lose the truth, if you abandon absolute truth and you embrace concepts like relative truth or personal truth, you become subject to deception. You get tossed around by flawed human reasoning, which is heavily influenced by evil spirits. You become enslaved to that. Verse 33 shows how the self-righteous Pharisees, these people who were convinced they were righteous, responded to this statement of Christ. They answered him, we be Abraham's seed. We were never in bondage to any man. How say you, you shall be made free? They didn't understand what he was talking about. And Jesus answered, verse 34, verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever commits sin is the servant of sin. Now, that's a profound statement. Sin enslaves you. You become enslaved to that sin and to the devil. It opens your mind and life up to his influence.
Now, America has been embracing a lot of sin for a long time, and it has become enslaved. Notice this profound statement from Christ in verse 44 of John 8. You are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. There's a lot packed into that verse, but I just want to focus on the statement, the lusts of your father you will do, or you will to do. It's talking about the will of the people that he was speaking to. In his booklet, How to Be an Overcomer, in chapter 5, The War of the Wills, Gerald Flory wrote this: Christ was telling those religious people, you will to do what Satan does. Those men actually had the will of the devil. After all, they were trying to kill Christ. Now, this is an example of what the Apostle Paul called will worship in Colossians 3 and verse 23. If you cast aside what God's will is and you stop worshiping God, then you're always going to end up worshiping the human will. And that will always falls under the influence of Satan's will. The trap that these Pharisees fell into is far easier to fall into than people think. And it's far more common than people realize. This is why society today is taking such a radical turn to the left. I'd like to read a couple of paragraphs from an article by Selwyn Duke called To Deal with Leftists, Imagine You're Confronting Satan. He says this: the behavior of what we call today's left and what Satan would prescribe are virtually identical. Truth means nothing to leftists. The ends justify the means, and they will literally say or do anything to achieve their aims. They'll use violence, Antifa, BLM, rioting and attacking Trump supporters, and intimidation, doxing public officials and confronting them in various public spaces, while calling conservatives fascists and blaming them for the unrest. They'll rail against racism one moment and then excoriate a race, whites, the next. They'll preach equality while practicing inequality and discrimination, as with quotas and affirmative action. They'll claim to care about women victims, Kavanaugh Ford affair, and then smear women victims, such as Representative Keith Ellison case. They'll say, do it for the children, using kids as human props, while abetting the brutal killing of children in the womb. They'll preach tolerance, but then insist this means safe spaces, excluding conservatives and whites, and that opposing views must be squelched. They'll say it's un-American to question election outcomes, as Hillary Clinton did prior to November 8, 2016. But upon losing, scream how an election was stolen, as leftists did after November 8, 2016. Theirs is the ideology of anything goes. Again, this is what happens when you abandon absolutes. The truth doesn't matter. Truth is fallen in the streets, as it says in Isaiah 59. Anything goes. This article continues, leftists hate the Constitution, though they'll use and twist it to serve their ends. Of course, it will be discarded once leftists have enough power and its utility is no more. In fact, they would destroy civilization itself and are currently doing so to achieve power. They'd rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. Can you recognize Satan's thinking in what's happening in our world? This article says, the devil knows no limits. The left has one guiding principle, quote unquote, articulated many years ago by occultist Aleister Crowley: do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Do what thou wilt. That's the only guiding principle. Do what you will. That is why you see so much hypocrisy and such glaring double standards. There's no absolutes. You do whatever you need to do in the circumstances to achieve whatever you believe is right. Do what you will. Now, that motto, that mindset always ends up turning into will worship. Human beings led around by the nose by the devil. That is why there is such stunning alignment between the left's thinking and Satan's thinking. Satan holds people captive because of their sin, and he's drawing them into his world and his thinking, and he's extending his influence into their lives and into society. You really need to see this influence. I would encourage you to read Gerald Fleury's booklets, America Under Attack and Great Again. You can find these on thetrumpet.com in our literature library. These booklets are bright beacons exposing what is happening in the U.S. and in modern society. God is trying to show us Satan's involvement so we can recognize it, so we can proclaim it, we can warn people about it, and we can defend ourselves against it. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that'll do it for today's Trumpet Hour. If you liked the program today, I want to encourage you to sign up for our new email service, Signposts. The Trumpet's publisher, the Philadelphia Church of God, has begun this newsletter to help you, give you a simple, plain instruction and insight to help you to get to know your Bible and to live the abundant life. You can sign up for this service by visiting pcg.church. Just go to your internet browser and type in pcg.church. And if you just go down to the box that says an invitation, just put your email in there and click the button, and you'll begin to receive signposts. It's easy. It's absolutely free. I really think that you'll enjoy it. You'll get a message from Gerald Fleury every Friday. There's lots of instruction in there about the Bible and about Christian living, news of the work, behind the scenes look at what's happening in the PCG. Go sign up for it, Signposts. And you can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. I want to thank our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan. And I'll leave you with this thought from James Madison. Since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.